Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. O great and learned one, my mind is greatly illusioned by the distress of this nescience, and I therefore request you to clear it up. If you'd like to repeat after me. O great and learned one,
my mind
is greatly illusioned by the distress
of this nescience,
and I therefore request you
to clear it up.
Purport. Such mental bewilderment as represented here by Vidura takes place for some living entities, but not for everyone. For if everyone were bewildered, there would be no possibility of a solution by higher personalities. Shri Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshmana Gaur Nitai Ki. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yotapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamascha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadhavetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamascha He Krishna Kuruna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhyubhyevacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitti Namine Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Shubhad Ki Jai. Thank you everybody for joining. Thank you for the opportunity to serve the Srimad Bhagavatam again today. And it's very nice to take the blessings of the Vaishnavas before we start any spiritual discourse. And at the end of the day, that's what we do with the Mangalacharan. We take the blessings of the Acharyas, of the highly elevated spiritual souls, so that we can speak something and hear something which is transcendental. So take everybody's permission and blessings. So where are we in the Srimad Bhagavatam? So in chapter 6, which was entitled The Creation of the Universal Form, we see that Maitreya Muni was really talking about the difference between the super soul, the Supreme Lord, and the Jiva, the living entity. And he was talking about how the demigods had a part to play by manifesting, by entering into the different limbs, the different separated body parts of the Lord in terms of the universal creation. And then Maitreya Muni also talks about how the different classes of society, the different varnas, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they also come from the different body parts of the universal creation of the Lord. And then we end chapter 6 with Maitreya Muni saying something which is very prominent throughout scriptures, like the Bhagavad Gita, Isha Upanishad, about the inconceivable nature of the Lord. He even says that Brahma, who's the first son of the Lord, isn't able to conceive the inconceivable nature of the Lord and his potencies. Let alone Brahma, us as living entities, we also can't. If Brahma can't, what hope do we have? But further than that, in one of the verses, Maitreya Muni talks about how even the Lord himself doesn't understand his own potencies. So, I mean, we as jivas, what hope do we have to understand his potencies? And then we start off with chapter 7, which is entitled Further Inquiries by Vidura. And here we see that Vidura is asking many, many questions to Maitreya Muni again. Things like, how is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, connected to the material modes of nature. And, okay, how is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's meant to be beyond the modes of material nature, how is he able to showcase his pastimes? How is he able to exhibit his qualities without the use of the modes of nature? Then he talks about how is it that a pure soul with pure consciousness is bewildered? How does he come under the influence of nescience, of ignorance? And then some of his compassionate mood comes out. He doesn't ask the question of why do bad things happen to good people. He goes even further. He goes, why do bad things happen to any living entity? Because within every body, every material body, the Lord is present as the super soul. So how is it that bad things can happen when the Lord is personally present with the jiva? And then here in today's, in today's verse, we see Vidura is expressing his own distress at seeing the distress of all the other living entities. He's thinking about the awkward position that the conditioned souls are put in, and he's expressing his distress. He's saying that my mind is greatly illusioned by the distress. Who is Vidura? Yamaraj. Okay, yeah, so he's basically a manifesto of Yamaraj. And we know Yamaraj is a great personality. When we just look at Vidura in terms of his pastimes, actually just in verse 1 of this chapter, Shukadeva Goswami describes him as Dvapayana Suto Buddha. He says that he is the Buddha, the learned son of Dvapayana Vyasadev. And we know Vyasadev is the compiler of the Vedic literature. So just in verse 1 of this chapter, Shukadeva Goswami is describing Vidura as the learned son of the compiler of the Vedic literature. And yet here it's described that he's greatly illusioned, or that he's bewildered. He's in confusion himself. But even from the pastimes of the Mahabharata or the other sections of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that Vidura is indeed very learned, but he's also a greatly elevated soul. He's not only materially learned. We understand he's the advisor of Dhritarashtra Maharaj in the affairs of the kingdom. But he's also very spiritually elevated, and he's very spiritually knowledgeable. He's instructing and guiding Dhritarashtra in many ways. He's guiding the Pandavas in many ways. And so we see this discourse, this conversation that's taken place between Maitreya Muni and Vidura, is actually a discussion between two very elevated personalities, two liberated souls, two great devotees of the Lord. And as a devotee, we understand from the scriptures that a devotee is paradukhadukhi. He feels the distress when he sees other people going through distress. And we see that this inquiry of Vidura in this section, especially the past couple of verses in this one, is of that same mood. He's thinking about the position of the living entities and thinking like, how are they put in this position? And more than that, what can we do to free them from the negative reactions that they're going through? And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that, quote, such mental bewilderment as represented here by Vidura, quote. He's saying that actually Vidura was not in bewilderment. He's a great devotee. He understands that the Lord has a plan. He's very learned. He knows the Shastric injunctions about what happens, the influence of karma, etc., etc. But he's representing the bewilderment, because he's basically asking on behalf of the conditioned souls that, look, we're all put in this position of nescience. We're all put in this position of suffering. And Vidura, being a great learned personality, is asking on behalf of us, how can we free ourselves? How can we get free from the negative reactions of suffering? So we can see that Vidura is really epitomizing the mood of compassion for the living entities. And we see this mood in many personalities throughout the scriptures. The Bhagavad Gita, we see, is a conversation between Arjuna and Krishna. But it's not just a normal conversation. We see that under the influence of Krishna's energies, Arjuna is put into bewilderment so that the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken, which would help and support all the living entities. And even throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see in different purports when Parikshit Maharaj is asking questions, which seem not ordinary for a liberated soul to be asking. He's asking various questions so that the sages who are assembled there can come to the correct conclusion of the Vedic literature. Because Parikshit Maharaj is feeling the compassion that actually there's so many personalities that are present here. They're all assembled here to hear this katha from Shukadeva Goswami. And he's thinking, okay, I don't want them to just be bewildered. I don't want them to just live in ignorance about their position, about the conclusion of the Vedic literature. Let me ask the right questions so that they can go on the journey and come to the right conclusion, which will then also help me focus on what I actually need to do in terms of my duty at the end of life. In the purport of Canto 1, Chapter 19, Verse 24, Srila Prabhupada says, quote, "The conclusion arrived at thereof is that devotional service of the Lord Sri Krishna, as it is confirmed by the Lord himself in the last phases of the Bhagavad Gita, is a last word in relation to everyone's permanent duty in life. Maharaj Parikshit was already aware of this fact, but he wanted the great sages assembled there to unanimously give their verdict on his conviction, so that he might be able to go on with his confirmed duty without controversy." Unquote. So he saw that the sages weren't necessarily in agreement about the conclusion of the Vedic literature, but just so that he could make sure that they come to the right conclusion, so that his journey at the end of life, he could actually fulfill his duty, which is absorbing himself in Krishna. He could take them on the journey with him. And so we see that compassion is something that comes very naturally to a devotee, because a devotee is thinking about the welfare of other people. So really and truly, we can't see other people's problems if we don't have compassion. And compassion we can categorize in different ways. On one level, and I guess you can give a hierarchical, progressive form of compassion, right? Levels of compassion. At level one, you've got something like pity, where you're like, you're seeing somebody go through some suffering and you're thinking, okay, like, I'm sad for that person. I'm feeling sorry for that person. But then you just move on with your life, right? When you have pity for someone, you don't really stop to do anything. You don't really try to help out. And in fact, it's just a flickering thought. It's detached. It's a detached form of compassion. And arguably speaking, you could see that pity, in one sense, comes from a place of, or at least many times, comes from a place of superiority. You're thinking, oh, such a poor soul. And you're thinking that your position is better. Then you might level up in your mood of compassion and you see with the lens of sympathy. Now you're thinking, oh, you know, this person is really going through something. Let me help them out. Let me support them. Let me do something to help them go through their suffering. It's still coming from a place of detachment in one sense. It's, you're helping out. You're actively doing something. But really and truly, you're not emotionally connected. You're just seeing that they're going through something, so you want to help them out in some way so that they can get through it. But it's still quite impersonal. But then on another level, you can see that compassion can be in the form of empathy. Now you're starting to put yourself in the position of that person going, actually, they're going through something so bad. They're suffering a lot. If I was in their position, I really wouldn't want this. I'd want somebody to help me out. And so you still help out. You might still support them. You might still do something. But now you're emotionally connected. Your emotions are invested in trying to help the other person. But then there's something even higher than empathy. And that's mercy. Because now you're seeing that, okay, I'm looking at these people and they're going through distress, they're going through suffering in their life. I can't bear to see that. I can't bear to witness that. So you're not just thinking about how can I support them through their difficult period. You're actually thinking about how can I help them help alleviate their suffering? How can I help them get rid of suffering altogether? I'll call it proactive action in compassion. Because now you're thinking about not just dealing with them when something goes wrong or helping them when something goes wrong, but actually looking at how can I do something, what can I actually do actively to help them become free of suffering before they're even suffering. And we see that the world, the modern world, the, in quotes, non-Krishna conscious world, is moving towards that place of compassion now, that place of compassion in the form of empathy and mercy. We see there's so many charities out there. We see there's so many welfare projects out there that are trying to support other people. I mean, many times, at least back in the day, there used to be adverts on adopt an animal, right? They'd show you animals in the jungle, etc., that are becoming extinct. Or nowadays, especially modern adverts, it's like showing people in poverty-stricken countries, warfare, or natural disaster zones, and just trying to... They're using these adverts to try and invoke an emotion of compassion for them, but also giving the opportunity to act on that compassion by making some means of support available. You can donate to the cause, to the charity. You can come and volunteer and help us out in Africa or something like that. So they're using the form of compassion to try and, or in empathy and mercy, to say that, look at this, look at the distress, feel compassionate, and then get involved. And at least for me, the compassionless side of me might be thinking, like, when I see the advert, here we go again, another one of these adverts, another place where they're just showcasing a charity that so many bad things are happening in the world. That's the compassionless side of me thinking that. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that actually welfare of others is the duty of all living entities. It's mentioned in Canto 10, Chapter 22, Verse 35. Etavajjanma sapalyam dehinamiha deheshu pranir atardhya vacha shaya acharanam sada. Quote, it is the duty of every living being to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence, and words. Unquote. So we have to perform some welfare activity for the people. That's our duty. But the question is, what is the greatest welfare activity that we could do? Remembering a pastime of His Holiness Kandamgunana Maharaj, where he was sharing about his time in Calcutta, and he was talking about how he sees that the doctors are really going above and beyond the call of duty in Calcutta. He was sharing how he would see that, okay, there's so many patients in the waiting room of the hospitals or the GP practice. There's so many people in the corridors. There's so many people in the gardens of the hospital and the GP practice. And they're all waiting to be seen by the doctor. Some of them have broken arms. Some of them are bleeding. Some of them are sick or whatever it is. And he's thinking, wow, these doctors are going above and beyond. They're sacrificing so much their day and night in order to do welfare for the people. They're not just thinking about themselves. They're giving their time, their energy, every moment they can to support other people. And then at one time, he was giving a class, probably at the Calcutta temple, I don't know which temple. And then he was sharing how there was a man there who came up and spoke to him and was like, Maharaj, you're doing such amazing welfare work for the society. And Maharaj is like, no. You're doing the real welfare work. You're performing such a great sacrifice to help other people out. And this doctor, he was actually saying that, no, you're right, I am doing welfare work. But you're doing the greatest welfare work. Why? Because I'm like a mechanic. I'm fixing the car, the bodily machine. But you're preaching, you're spreading this Christian consciousness, which is fixing or helping the soul. I'm dealing with the temporary material body, but you're dealing with the welfare of the eternal spirit soul. And so we can see that the greatest welfare work needs to be something which is substantial, which is everlasting. Any welfare work we do for the body is ultimately going to end when the body ends. We understand from the Bhagavad Gita that we've got three levels of identity. We've got the gross body, the subtle body, and the spirit soul. The gross and subtle are material. And so any welfare work for the gross or the subtle body ultimately meets an end. And we might become indifferent at some point as devotees. I know I did. We become indifferent with the material situation of people sometimes. We think that, okay, you know, all we need to care about is compassion for the spirit soul. At the end of the day, the spirit soul passes through all these different stages of life, and at the end we'll reincarnate anyway, so it doesn't matter what the body goes through. Just focus on the spirit soul. But we see that can become very impersonal. We can see that that becomes very, that actually is a lack of compassion, because as a devotee, we're interested in being compassionate for all types of suffering. When you look at a very famous pastime of Srila Prabhupada, where he saw that there were young children on the streets fighting stray dogs for food in the garbage bins. Now, he could have looked at it and gone, oh, it doesn't matter, you know, they're not this body, they're a spirit soul anyway. Or, that at the end of the day, even if the bodies of the children is slain and eaten to pieces by the dogs, doesn't matter, because the soul is never slain anyway. He didn't do that though. What did he do? He saw what was happening and he felt sad. He felt sad for the children that they have to go through this. And then he instructed the disciples to basically go, within a 10-mile radius of the temple, nobody should go hungry. And thus, Food for Life, or back in the day, I think it was called ISKCON Food Relief or something, was created. Now we might think, okay, somebody might think, oh, like he's just giving a material solution, just food for life, you know? Just giving, distributing food. But he wasn't distributing food. He was distributing prasadam. Because he saw that, okay, yes, these people, these children, the personalities, they need something to support their material life. They need a material solution. But Srila Prabhupada, being a devotee, he was thinking that material solution isn't what's going to cut it out here. Material solution will fix them temporarily. But I need to, and I want to give them something greater. And so he was doing prasadam distribution, which is that he wanted them to get connected to Krishna in some way, shape or form. And so as a devotee, ultimately we know that material suffering, if we find material solutions to any material suffering, the suffering is going to come back in some way, shape or form. We know that the solution to material suffering is a spiritual connection. And so no matter what we do, no matter what we try, no matter who we know in the world, we know that we can't help or solve the core problems of life, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, birth, death, disease, old age. We can't solve that for anyone. Even we ourselves go through these because we're still conditioned in many ways. And so the root cause of the problem of any suffering in the world, we understand, is caused by having the material body. And ultimately, we have the material body because we're so focused on satisfying the desires of the senses instead of using the senses to satisfy the desires of Rishikesha, the master of the senses, the Supreme Lord, Krishna. And so as a devotee, we want to try and help other people, including each other, to re-establish our connection with Krishna. If you saw a child, a lonely child in the street or at a park or something, and you saw that the child was crying non-stop, you could be thinking, okay, like, let me help the child out. Let me get the child a chocolate. Let me get the child a toy. Let me take the child to the swings. And sure, the child might be pacified for a bit. The child might be thinking, okay, you know, like after a while, the child might stop crying and just get absorbed in the activity of, okay, the chocolate bar, nom, 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 nom. But then after a while, you know, the child's going to start crying again. Shishiradha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Gornitayaki. Because we understand that really the greatest welfare for the child is to connect the child back to its parents. Because the parents can actually look after the child in the best way. And from the Bhagavad Gita, we understand that we're all parts and parcels of Krishna. We're all children of God. Mamevamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha. Mama shastrani indriyani. Help me out with the last verse. Prakriti sani karshati. Or prakriti sani karshati. So yeah, so we're all living entities and we're all children, parts and parcels of God. And we're struggling with the senses and the mind. And so, if the welfare activity for a small child, the best welfare for a small child is to connect the child back to its parents, then the welfare activity of a part and parcel of Krishna is to connect that part and parcel back to Krishna. And when we recognize this, that ultimate compassion really means to connect people back to Krishna, then we can truly embrace, understand, and appreciate the spiritual mercy that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Srila Prabhupada had given to the world. Because their mood wasn't that, oh, you're a Shudra, oh, you're a Stri, you're a woman, oh, you're a dog or a dog eater, and therefore you're not eligible for the mercy. That wasn't their mood. Their mood was that this mercy, this spiritual mercy, is available to everyone. In the purport of Canto 4, Chapter 7, Verse 53, Srila Prabhupada says, devotees are compassionate to every conditioned soul, and therefore they are known as aparakya buddhi. Because devotees are learned and know that every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, they preach Krishna consciousness to everyone, so that everyone may be happy. If a particular part of the body is diseased, the whole attention of the body goes to that part. Similarly, devotees care for any person who is forgetful of Krishna and therefore in material consciousness. The equal vision of the devotee is that he works to get all living entities back home, back to Godhead. Unquote. A truly advanced devotee sees everyone with an equal vision. Pandita Samadarshina. He sees that everyone with an equal vision, whether they're somebody in the mode or a personality in the mode of goodness like a brahmana, whether a personality in the mode of passion like an elephant, a personality in the mode of ignorance like a dog or a dog eater. They see everyone equally, and they see that everyone is eligible to receive the mercy of connecting back to Krishna. And because they truly deserve that everyone should and is eligible to be connected to Krishna, they invest their time, their energy, their meditation on how can I do welfare activity for others? How can I connect other people back to Krishna? And thus we see projects like the Sankirtan Mission. I was speaking to Antaranga Prabhu just before class, talking about the monthly Sankirtan festival tomorrow. I'm not a Sankirtan devotee, by the way, but I'm just going to plug that anyway for anyone interested. But that's there. Why? Because we're trying to do welfare for others. You have projects like at the Manor, we've got the School of Bhakti, or we've got things like Think Gita, or different projects around the world to try and spread Srila Prabhupada's books to try and spread the knowledge that's available. And we see these great personalities that start these projects. They're meditating, they're thinking on how can I best spread this spiritual wisdom so that people have an opportunity to come out of the ignorance, out of the nescience. And sometimes we see that we come across people, whether at the temple, on the streets, or anywhere, where they're not really in a place in life where they can appreciate transcendental wisdom. They're so absorbed in their material situation and the anxieties that they're going through that they have no space in their consciousness to think about anything else. And sometimes we can become hard-hearted and be like, okay, they have to deal with it, it's up to them, whatever. But actually, as a devotee, as somebody who's trying to be an instrument of Krishna's mercy, we need to see, how can I connect them back to Krishna? Because we know that that's what they need. They're going through suffering in their life because they need to be connected in some way. But we also appreciate that they're not ready for the wisdom aspect in their life. So connect them in some way. We might help them out in their situation. We might give them the toy or the chocolate to help make progress towards the material fix. But always thinking about and focusing on having a vision of how can I get them connected to Krishna. I'm giving them something, but giving them that something in the mood of through this something they will come to Krishna. That something will help them now, but that something will also open the doors to connect them to Krishna. And so in that way we can become instruments of the Lord to enlighten and inspire others to come closer to Krishna, to develop and enhance and empower their connection to Krishna. And so as devotees, we can then become ambassadors of spiritual mercy and not just material mercy. So conscious of time, so I'll end there. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Any questions, comments, corrections, suggestions, Radha Govinda Prabhu? Is there a mic? Next to you. Prajan Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the class. Very thought after. So I see you did a lot of thinking on the compassion, mercy and all that. So that was nice. I was just thinking, you mentioned there's a lot of charities who kind of help with like, you know, adopt a dog or, you know, a pet, or sometimes they go into like a war zone and help out people. Now, we're not always in all these different places, and I'm just wondering whether we know that the highest thing is giving the mercy, giving, spreading Krishna consciousness or prasadam or something like that. But I'm just thinking that sometimes there is a dire need of certain things, which is just where we're not there. So I was just wondering, if a devotee has the capacity, should we think about these places like war zones and charities and support them if you have the capacity to help out in those places? Or should we just say like, you know, there are other people doing that work, let's just carry on sharing Krishna consciousness. What's a devotee's outlook on that? Just your thoughts.
It's a nice question. So how should a devotee respond to something that's happening on, and I'm going to extremize it, but if that's even a word, what's happening on the other side of the world? Should we go and help out? Should we support them in some way? Or should we just go, we can't do anything because it's not going to be spiritual and therefore move on? I remember when the whole Ukraine-Russia thing started, then Vishakha Mataji or Vishakha Prabhu had given a class at the manor, and I'd heard it online. And it really struck me what she was saying, because at that time there were some devotees that were going from the UK, traveling around, like risking their life to go to that place to give prasadam distribution, to kind of, I guess, also inspire them in spiritual ways. And she was talking about how, yeah, if we have the capacity, then this is something we can do. We can go and help out. But we see that we're not just going to help them out in material ways. We're going to help them out in spiritual ways on top. They're struggling with food. Ukraine was struggling with food. So ISKCON devotees are going to give food, but not food, prasadam, because we want to connect them to Krishna. But then the other thing that really strikes me is that how much can we really do? we'll help one person out, two people out, 10 people out, 100 people out. But we have a weapon that is available to us as devotees that no other organization has available. And that weapon is the weapon of prayer. Through prayer, we can connect to Krishna. And just like Ambarish Maharaj, he used all of his spiritual credit praying for the Rasa Muni and for Krishna to give the Rasa Muni mercy. We can also pray to Krishna that using all the devotional service I've done, please support and help all these people who are suffering come closer to you. So yeah, if we have capacity, and I guess it's more of an individual thing. Some people may have capacity and they'll feel more comfortable donating. Some people may have capacity and they'll feel, actually, you know what, I want to do something. And they go physically to these places and support them out. But others, we may feel that actually I don't have the capacity for these, or I feel more comfortable focusing purely on connecting them to Krishna. And so we can pray. And that's something we can do liberally because it doesn't cost us anything to pray. So, if that helps.
Just a quick comment on that. Thank you. That's very insightful. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj also used to say that charity has two sides. Like one is you're helping somebody. But at the same time, it's also for your own good. Mm-hmm. And he mentions that sometimes in situations we can try and justify things, but if you don't give charity, then it makes you hard-hearted.
Yes.
And you start thinking, no, I don't need to do that. I only focus on this. And once I remember many years ago, I was in Sankirtan, and it was like a sacred street party, and there were a few Prabhupada disciples there, and there was one Prabhupada disciple. And at that time, there were the Salvation Army people, and they were going around collecting. And I remember them coming to me and he said, can you give me something? And I was like, no, I ain't give you anything. You know, like, not in my mind, I'm thinking I'm collecting for the highest good. You know, I'm like Sankirtan money. I'm not going to share Sankirtan Lakshmi with you. And the Prabhupada disciple, one of them came to me and said, no, can you give him like £5? I was like, okay. So then I gave him £5. And then he said, they're doing very good work. He said, they're helping people. So you should always give when people ask like that. So just as an example.
No, thank you for that. I remember, I think it was Prabhupada, I think. Somebody can correct me, but there was a pastime where I think there were devotees that were hearing some musicians on the street. And obviously they're going around and collecting donations and stuff. Was it Prabhupada? Is this? Okay. And then Prabhupada was like, oh, you should give something to them. And they were like, but they're just mundane musicians. Like, why are we giving? But Prabhupada made the same point that actually you've just taken something from them. You heard them. You've enjoyed their music. So now you should give something in return because otherwise you become hard-hearted about it. So yeah, thank you for that reminder that if we don't give our compassion, we'll become hard-hearted. Thank you. Yes.
Hare Krishna, that was a wonderful class. Thank you. Just on that point as well, like... in giving charity, like when you're in India and you meet a lot of children begging or people begging, we're often taught like, you shouldn't give them money, like gets involved in their karmic cycle. And you know, when I was in Vrindavan, like I was taught by my seniors, like just kind of almost like block it out. Because once you give to one, you just get swarmed by many. And what would your advice be on dealing with that? Because it doesn't ever feel nice, like, me going to India, I'm in a very fortunate position, and something that's so small to me is like everything to those people. And it, yeah, I really struggle with like that mindset towards, yeah.
I'm in the same predicament. Yeah. I guess just sharing something that I've personally heard and learned is that money is a very interesting form of charity because we don't know where the money ends up going. So one thing that we can do is that if we feel that compassion, we want to do something, we could always convert our money into something that will be used and can only really be used in a meaningful way, like donating them food or prasadam or clothes or something like that, something that we know will be used in the correct way. So that's something that could be done. Like, for example, when we're going to India, we could take some, you know, old clothes or something with us and we could distribute those. But yeah, again, I mean, in the Bhagavad Gita, we have charity in the different modes. So we have to look at the time, place, circumstance of when we give charity. But as Radhagovinda Prabhu said, if we don't give charity, we become hard-hearted. So we have to find a form of charity that we feel comfortable with, that we know or ideally can see that will be used and put to good use. But money gets very controversial for people. So apologies, it doesn't really help, but maybe think about ways on how to convert the money into something meaningful. Might be an extra added form of love that you're adding to the charity, because now you're actually thinking about what is it that these children need that then you can give. Anyone else? Paramakaruna Prabhu? I'll embrace my seat.
All right, Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the class. Maybe I missed something because I came in a little late. Just looking at the purport here, the second part of the purport. If everyone were bewildered, there would be no possibility of a solution by higher personality. So Prabhupada here is talking about the bewilderment of Vidura. And if I understand correctly, Vidura's bewilderment is living entity is pure. How is it? And within the living entity is the super soul, right? Or within this body there is the super soul. So then how can there be calamities, suffering, etc. For the living entity? So here Prabhupada is saying, if everyone were bewildered in such a way, then there would be no possibility of solution from the higher personalities. So I'm just trying to understand, what does that mean?
What does the second part of the purport actually mean?
Mean, yeah.
So I don't want to talk about some of the verses that come later on, because then Maitra Muni, when he responds back, he talks about the whole situation and answers the questions, basically. But my understanding of this part of the purport is really about how there are personalities who are pure in consciousness. Yes, we're all pure in consciousness, because that's the position of the spirit soul. But we're conditioned because we're covered. Our pure consciousness is covered. Whereas there are personalities who are in tune and in connection with Krishna. And therefore, they aren't bewildered. And I can't remember when he joined, but I was talking about how Vidura is actually one of those personalities. He's not actually bewildered, because at the start of the purport, Prabhupada says he's represented. The mental bewilderment is represented by Vidura. So Vidura is asking this question on behalf of the conditioned souls, who in reality are absorbed in their material consciousness, so they can't even think about, oh, there's something beyond this. And therefore, the liberated souls, their mood is that, okay, I can see all these people in nescience. Let me ask on behalf of them, so that the question and answer of how to be free of the nescience can actually take place. But if we don't have liberated souls who are in and among us, then number one, the chance of a question becomes very rare. We rely on the ascending process of mental speculation to ask these questions, which could take many, many years, many, many generations. And even if the question is asked, the answer won't be available, because the personalities aren't there to show us that, to point us, these are Krishna's words in the Vedic literature, and this is how you connect back to Krishna, connect back to your Satchidananda spirit soul. So I don't know if that helps. So if you have any insights, reflections.
There is no possibility of solution by higher personality. So basically, if everyone was bewildered, well, Prabhupada is saying that higher personalities, liberated personalities, they'll not be able to save them.
The way I'm reading and understanding is that the question is, if there were no liberated souls. Because if everybody was bewildered, then that means that there's no liberated souls who are not bewildered. So it's not the question of there's people out there who need higher education. It's a question of there's nobody to give higher education, and therefore, even though everybody needs it, nobody's available to give it. So the way I'm reading the purport is from the angle of there's, if there was no liberated soul or liberated personality present, then there's no solution that higher solution that can be given, because there's no higher personality that's available.
Krishna can send, no? Krishna himself can come.
Krishna can send, Krishna and, comes.
Higher personality can refer to Krishna, not just the devotees, not just the living entities in this world.
Higher personality could also be Krishna himself. Cyrus Prabhu, right?
So it seems like so these personalities, they won't be bewildered if they to be in a position to deliver us. They cannot be bewildered themselves. So it seems like they will have to come from somewhere else, maybe the spiritual world. Or else they would be bewildered, just like the rest of us. Yeah. And then there would be no hope.
The Nitya Siddhas that come down for our elevation. Mm. Yeah, that's a nice point. Okay, any other questions, comments? Otherwise... No? Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Shri Prabhupada ki.